Hi there, and you're very welcome to episode 3 of Triton Lake Perform. My name is Connor Smith, the founder and CEO of Triton Lake, a marketplace that efficiently connects sophisticated investment allocators with relevant private market opportunities. In 2021, Triton Lake became the title sponsor of the Ireland men's and women's rugby sevens teams. This podcast explores the intersections of sport and business, looking at what both worlds can learn from each other and what are the key parts to the puzzle of high performance. In the first two episodes, we heard from Billy Dardis, the captain of the Ireland men's rugby sevens team, and from David Nusifora, the high performance director of the IRFU. Today, we're delighted to be joined by Lucy Mulhall, captain of the Ireland women's rugby sevens team, who has recently returned from Langford in Canada, having led her team to a bronze medal in the World Series. The Ireland women's sevens team currently stands fifth in the overall world rankings. Lucy, you're very welcome. Maybe before we get started into the questions proper, do you want to give us a little bit of an insight into Lucy and where Lucy came from and what happened before you were introduced to rugby?
Yeah, perfect. Thanks for having me, firstly, Connor. Yourself and Triton Lake have been such good supporters of us over the last year and looking forward to the future. But so Lucy Mulhall, I'm a country girl from down in Wicklow. I was born and raised on a farm with my two parents. My grandmother actually lived with us. We lived in my dad's home place. And I had an older sister and three younger brothers. And we grew up as a GAA mad household. Even despite being from Wicklow, we were mad about GAA. And personally for me, I played a bit of camogie, but mainly it was ladies football. And loved it and dreamed of playing at Croke Park and wanted to win All Irelands. And was very fortunate actually to win one in 2011. At the age of 18, I ended up playing in Croke Park, drawing the first All Ireland, and then I actually turned 18 in between the first one and the replay, and then we won. So getting to play in Croke Park twice was pretty special for me. Then I went on to college. I started radiation therapy in Trinity and still was GAA mad, playing GAA with college, with county, became the captain of Wicklow. And then out of the blue, I was sitting in a lecture one day, very distracted as I would be, and I got an email from Stan McDowell. He was the development coach within the IRFU, and that email changed my life. Invited me in to try out this sport of sevens rugby. Rugby wasn't something I'd massively followed before. I followed it on the TV, and I think he said something. He'd been following me a bit playing GAA, and something that stood out for him was one of my answers to a profile as being captain for Wicklow was my favourite sporting moment was watching the girls win the Grand Slam. So I think that was, he kind of seen me as being someone that was open to rugby and open to exploring what it was all about. So fell in love with the game, and 8 years later now, this month, to the day now, it's since I started, and yeah, it's best decision I ever made.
And what, just to give us a feel maybe for what the women's sevens program was like back then, was it, were you in the World Series at that stage, or was there, how did it look at that point?
Yeah, so I actually went to Amsterdam, which was the last World Series leg that season, on a development squad, and watched the girls on the series, and they actually unfortunately got relegated on that stage. Then they went to the Euros when I was just doing skill sessions with Stan at this stage, and they went to the Euros and missed out on qualifying for the repechage to re-qualify onto the series. So we faced a year off the series, which at the time was devastating for the programme. The programme actually just moved to being a centralised programme that July, which was then when I signed my first contract. But it was, in many ways, it was probably good timing for me because the girls were off the series for a year. I got a chance as a brand new person to the sport to train really hard and try and work my way onto the team. But at the same time, it was quite a difficult time for those girls. There was quite a number of changes. And one of them being, it was probably 5 months into my playing career when Anthony Eddy joined as head coach, and that for me was a pivotal part of my career. I think it was 3 months into him arriving, he made me captain. So the first time I ran out for my first cap for Ireland, I was captain of the squad. So he definitely seen something in me at that stage and pushed me on.
Great. If we fast forward all the way to a few days ago from today, Tell us a little bit about the most recent World Series tournament and achieving the bronze medal. And obviously we had a silver medal earlier in the year, but recent memory is probably front of mind. So tell us how that felt.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sitting here discussing medals and getting to choose between tournaments. Tournaments with medals, as we're so fortunate to be able to discuss this season. It's the first time for us, and getting bronze in the last tournament, I think it was more special even than silver, because there's that bit of added pressure when you first achieve something, and achieving silver was a massive step up. Like, that's the first time we ever medaled, so we'd never even achieved the bronze at that stage, and we achieved a silver. So there was a lot of unknown territory there going in, and being favourites against teams that you'd often and be the underdog against. And I think how we dealt with that as a team, and how we built to try and go from grey to gold and not be satisfied. And again, our aim was gold, and it always will be gold. So it's funny, you're never completely satisfied. But for me, I think looking at the team and looking at the mentality that we showed this weekend, it's just really pleasing. And it was that real reinforcement that, yeah, we actually belong up here at the top. So it just builds even more excitement for what's ahead.
Yeah, and especially with some of the teams back that had been missing from prior tournaments as well, right? So this is the same as the men's team in Singapore almost. You know, you can get to that level against with everyone there.
Yeah, so. Totally. Like, arguably New Zealand and Fiji probably before this season we're in the top three at least, and they're extremely competitive teams, so for us to still be competing with full complement there, that's really, really promising.
No, excellent. Let's go back in time a little bit again, and you mentioned that you made your debut as captain, and you also touched earlier on the fact that you captained the Wicklow side in the past, so there's some leadership gene there, right? That exists. What was it that Ant saw in you, or that made you captain of the GAA team, or what do you think it is?
I'm not sure. I often speak to the girls now about how I think it took me 4 or 5 years to really figure out and develop myself as being a captain, and being getting close to being worthy of being a captain of a national squad. I think I was very fortunate that Anthony seen me at such a young age, because it's given me that much time now to be able to learn and develop my leadership skills. I think perhaps passion is probably something that I have, and that I'm not afraid to speak about my passion or my emotions. But again, I think all of that has developed with age, and I think I'm a lot better of a captain than I was years ago. But I think having all that time, I'm very fortunate to have been able to learn from other players, because I was one of the youngest players in the squad at the time. So it's just been great to be around high performers and learn and take bits from players that I've played with throughout all the years, and hopefully I'll just continue to do that for as long as I get to play and as long as I get to be captain.
And is it something that you enjoy, you think, the leadership role?
Yeah, I love it. It probably took me a time. I probably felt the pressure of it. I think as a young player, I hadn't quite found my feet in the sport. I was still learning rugby, and then I was suddenly the decision maker on the pitch. And the leader when I still wasn't very confident in my place in the squad. I think that now I actually love it. I love it because I'm so well supported. I think now I've got a really good group of players that in themselves are all captains. And I think I've learned that it's actually less about me being a leader and more about empowering the girls around me, and that's really helped me, because if anything, it takes work off my plate, but also creates a better atmosphere within the squad and a better culture within the squad as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, as we touched on earlier on, one of the things we try to explore here is the crossover between elite sports and business, right? And the same is very true, obviously, in putting people in roles that they're comfortable and want to excel in, and letting them believe in themselves and go for it.
Yeah, totally. Other girls have so much better strengths than me in certain areas, and they're the right ones for the job. So I think building a good group around you and letting people play to their strengths, both on and off the field, is so important.
Good segue there to pressure a minute ago and things like that. When you think about the World Series, and you know, I think it was David Nusafora said in the interview we had, the thing about sevens is there's nowhere to hide, right? It's a short game, it's a big pitch, you make a mistake, everyone sees it. You know, a couple of things don't go your way and all of a sudden you're not getting through to the quarterfinals. Tell us a little bit about that pressure and how you and how the squad deal with that in order to make sure that you step up on the day.
Yeah, I think that's been a massive shift for us. Probably pre and post COVID has been around how we're able to deal with pressure. I think when things aren't going well and when you're losing and when you're the underdog, it's very easy to compound errors. And when an error happens, it kind of reinforces that in your head that, yeah, you're the underdog, or yeah, you're going to make these mistakes. Whereas I think we stopped searching for perfection because that doesn't exist in sevens. You look at the final last weekend, Australia, New Zealand, there was so many errors. It was just more around who can react the best to it. And I think that comes firstly with that kind of not actually always striving for perfection, going firstly with just maximum effort, and that's all we expect for each other from each other is maximum effort, but then also getting to know each other off the pitch. And I think that's been massive for us. When you know someone really well, you know how much they offer the team. So like, people will look at the likes of Amy Lee and all the tries that she scores. That is way down the list of things that I think of her strengths as a person. I think she's like, there's so much more qualities that she has as a friend, as a person, both on and off the field, that contributes to the team but also contributes to our friendship. That then it doesn't matter if she makes an error, she knows that I support her and we're still we'll still be as close as ever. And I think that's the same with everyone on that pitch, is that when you feel supported and it's not this pass fail people will lose respect to me or whatever the case may be, it actually becomes that you just play with this freedom, and the fear of failure or the feeling of pressure kind of leaves, and it's more around just going out and giving your maximum effort.
Again, just to touch on one of the points there that you alluded to in terms of that final between New Zealand and Australia, but obviously we had a final ourselves a few months ago. When you think about a game like that, I mean, obviously you're going into it thinking, okay, we're going to medal for the first time, right? But at the same time, do you approach it differently, those the bigger games, or is it the same mindset, the same plan, no matter whether you're going into a final like that against Australia or you're against one of maybe the weaker sides at the pool stage?
Yeah, I think what was really important for us that weekend and probably last weekend as well was allowing ourselves to feel those great emotions of winning a semi-final, of singing your national anthem. Like, our coach encouraged us to sing it, smile, enjoy it, take in all the emotions that there are. But then as soon as you go back to the huddle again, then it's just another game. I think naively we didn't maybe... it was maybe just more around game scenarios that we let slip up in that final. Maybe that's down to the fact that it's a final and the added pressure. Maybe it's down to Australia being more used to being in a final and being a bit more game savvy, where we didn't recognise coming to a last scrum that they were going to come really hard for our ball. And they're just massive learnings for us. But to me, they're probably learnings that are going to continue to happen, whether it be in a final or be in a pool stage. And I think it's more... maybe on the day we just weren't the better team. I think there were certain things that, yeah, it was so close. There's so many things we could have done to win that game. But at the same time, they're champions for a reason. And even just the experience of being there and knowing that there was two or three pivotal moments that if we had maybe chose a different option, that the outcome could have been different, that's really positive, because that's very fixable. And it just shows that we're on the way to beating the likes of Australia on the series.
Makes sense. Maybe let's talk about 15s for a minute. You made your Ireland debut on the 15 side last year. How do you see the transition of skills between the two? And I mean, we touched on the nowhere to hide and those kind of things. And it feels to me like sevens is rugby at its rawest almost in terms of skills, right? Do you feel like there's enough opportunity for those skills to come to the surface in 15s, or how much of it is transitionable, if that's a word?
Yeah, there's definitely transition. I think the core skills like passing, tackling, awareness of space, there's a certain level of transition, but at the same time, to me, it felt like quite a different sport. I'd never really played 15s before. I joined Wicklow Rugby Club this year and was fortunate to get three games with them leading into the Six Nations. But prior to my first cap, I was very raw to 15s, and I think there's a lot of transferable skill, but at the same time, there's so much less space. There's so many more people that it's so much more technical and tactical. And even though you have handling skills or you can tackle, the the type of tackle that you're looking for in a 15s game or the type of pass that you're looking to execute is quite different. I think it just takes time. Like, I've seen how Stacey, Lee, Eve, Brittany, Babe, like, there's so many girls who have transitioned over and have done it really, really well. So there definitely is elements that are, like, they're so valuable to both sports. And I think they both complement each other. I think coming back into sevens, it definitely helped me around that whole awareness of space. If you can find space on a 15s pitch, then you can surely find it in a 7s pitch.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think they complement each other, and it's an exciting challenge because it was very much outside my comfort zone, and I didn't know if I'd ever get an opportunity to do it. So I just feel very fortunate to have four caps now.
Absolutely. And I guess there's, you alluded to this in the last section, but the having those teammates around you, that there's this trust and bond between in both camps, obviously helps as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's so cool doing it all together. That was so nice for me to get to go and play 15s with those girls. And then there's so many girls that I've played sevens with and were part of our sevens family for years, like the likes of Emer Considine, that it was great to just get back in and play with those girls again. There's kind of a familiarity as well as getting to know new faces as well. So yeah, it was really nice.
And when you think about that, maybe we'll just spend a little bit more time on this one, but that trust between the teammates, was that primarily driven from playing together, or is it, like you said, it's more an off the pitch friendship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring that to the pitch, or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, I think there has to be both. I think the most important element is the off field. I think it's been a massive thing for us was being vulnerable with each other and being okay with showing each other weakness, opening up about if you've got things going on at home, but then also actually being curious that I want to know you as a person, not just as a player, because then you know that you're not just there functionally for that person, and that person actually, if you get injured, they actually still do care about you. You're not just functional and you've lost your functionality to them because you can't play at the moment. So I think that was really important. But then equally, our team have went through a lot of struggles over the years. We've lost so many times. Even COVID itself, like, we were on Zoom calls with our physios how many times a week, and we were doing bake-offs and just kind of developing all of that kind of friendship and just time together that... It's funny because it wasn't forced. It was very much just natural, and it just happens to be that we all actually really enjoy spending time with each other.
Hmm.
We go on trips, and without even organising anything, we'll all find ourselves in a coffee shop sitting around a table for an hour laughing and joking, and that's not forced. That's just, we happen to enjoy each other's company. So I think it definitely helps then when it goes on to the field, because it means you'll go an extra mile, and it means that you really feel like you belong. And I think that's really important for girls who aren't on a trip as well, because our programme has 25 plus girls in it. And as much as they couldn't be on the field, not all of them last week in Canada, they're such a big part of it and they need to feel that. So I think that's really important that we have a bond off the field so that they know that they still belong to the group, and they're just as valued on the field as well as off the field.
Do you think it makes it difficult for you to be the leader when you have this close bond? Because I guess there are certain instances where you need to almost be giving direction, right? And I suppose you do that in more of a softer way maybe than anything else. But how does that fit in with the leadership role? And
yeah, it's definitely not my strongest point. But I think because we have such a bond, because we all buy into something, like, we've got a leadership group, so I'll rely on them heavily around, right, how do we deal with trying to increase this standard? But we all sit down like consistently with our management team and as a group, and we review our values, and our values are, it actually fits nicely into the word heart, which is the overall one, but it's hard work, accountability, excellence, respect and team. And once we all sat down and we all actually bought into that, promised to be a part of it, then it's very easy for me to go, here, that's not excellent. You said you were going to be excellent, and that's simple. You don't need to say anything else. You just say, yeah, that's not it. Like, let's make sure that's excellent. And I think because we have a good culture in there, and because I think it's easy when things are going well, but this even happened when things weren't going well. Because everyone cares about each other in there, then it is a matter of, yeah, okay, I'll pull up my socks, that's fine.
No, and I think maybe the last the last question around the leadership piece is just a role model one, right? So obviously we've identified that there's a leadership gene in there somewhere, right? But was there any role models as you were growing up that you saw in leadership roles that made you want to aspire? Or do you think it was just something that your behaviour lent itself to?
I definitely think it was shaped over years. In GA, I was very fortunate. When I first got called up on the county team, I was 17. And I had a lot of older girls that were like my inspiration and my role models on that team. Katrina McKeown was the captain at the time. But there were so many within it. And then even in Tinnehealy, in my club, just being around girls, the likes of Laura Hogan, Jackie, like even my older sister Emily that plays football, all of those kind of taught me, certainly taught me the aspects of hard work, and they taught me that you lead with your examples first. And I think that came from my home and my upbringing as well, that my parents are just very hardworking people, and they're very much that do your work first, let that kind of speak for you. And then as I grew up, I think being in a high performance environment, having that trust from Anthony at such a young age, I think that really kind of instilled in me this want to actually become a really good leader. And I think he helped shape me as a leader. He definitely drove standards, and I probably relied on him a lot to drive standards back then, where now they kind of are integral to our squad. And then also I just try and always listen to podcasts. I'm fascinated by what other sporting people are doing. One person for me that was a massive idol growing up was Katie Taylor, and people might not say she's a leader because she's not necessarily in a team environment, but I think being authentic to who you are and being yourself, and not changing that based on what might get you more publicity or what might make you more popular, I think that really hit home to me that if I stay being me, then I might have a chance of being a really good leader. Whereas if I start trying to change and become what I think or what the public thinks a leader is, then I'll just lose myself.
And not deliver on what you want to achieve, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Obviously, a key part of all of this is the motivation and the work ethic. And how do you get your head right and motivate yourself to put your body and mind through what you have to do?
Yeah, it's funny. It's kind of an internal drive, I think, from when I was younger. Again, my upbringing was very much that we worked hard at the weekends or in the evenings. We'd be out on the farm helping out, and then we worked hard in school. My mum and dad would always make sure that we were on top of our studies. And then when it came to playing football or anything, I remember getting up before school in the mornings, and we'd all as a family go out and run laps at the field because we had community games coming up or we had something coming up. So I think it kind of that instilled a lot of that work ethic inside of me, which now it kind of feels natural. And I think then it became even more when you get to wear a green jersey, that kind of like how else could you be more motivated than a green jersey? And then that nearly reached higher levels when the squad has just became like a home for me. So not only am I representing my family at home, I actually feel like I'm representing the Sevens family, that we are doing something really special for Sevens in the country. And I feel very strongly about that. Like, I feel like we can do something, put Sevens on the map, get more girls playing rugby, and then you don't need any much motivation than that on a day-to-day basis.
No, and I think that answers it very well, Lucy, from a day-to-day perspective, right? And if I think about the tournament environment, which is obviously physically extremely tough and mentally, and you need resilience and everything else. I mean, you're playing six games over a couple of days or 3 days if you're lucky, and a few hours gap in between them and everything else. I mean, how do you get through that? I mean, that's tough going as well.
Yeah, it is tough. It's kind of,
and traveling halfway around the world.
That's true. Yeah. We're very fortunate to do what we do, but Sevens is like, it's painful. It's kind of survival of the fittest. And I think maybe if there weren't six games over 2 days, I might not be playing at the level that I'm at, because I think to some degree my work ethic does compensate for other areas that I'm lacking in. But then also I think we're all natural competitors. And for me, it's kind of that attitude of like, rather than feeling sorry for myself, let's go and be the best out there when everyone else is suffering. Let's see if you can suffer a little bit more and keep going through it. And when you see your teammates do it, like when you see Eve Higgins get up off the ground and absolutely smash someone, like that really does get you going. So you might have lost a little bit of energy, or you might be like absolutely wrecked, but then as soon as you see Lee chase back, or Stacey make a big hit, or Emily Lane just talking to you consistently, then I think that's all you can rely on the pitch. Because people often talk about your external motivators that aren't there and then, but on the pitch, especially in sevens, you don't got time to think about anything outside of that. So I think it's kind of more what your teammates are doing around you that helps push you on.
And in terms of the training aspect, I mean, obviously you go through elite sports training to be able to do that from a fitness perspective, but how do you balance the overtraining and those kind of things? And obviously you mentioned when you're away, you'll end up sitting around a table and chatting for an hour and those kind of things. Is it a mixed kind of environment where you're training for a few hours and then you have time to yourselves? And
yeah, definitely. I think we train hard. We train harder than what we play. That's the idea. So training sometimes can get very tough because you want to train at 120% of what the match is, so the match might not feel as bad. For me, it's definitely something I struggled with for many years, was knowing when to say stop. The sneaky extra sessions, or the trying to push on and do all the extras all the time. And I think I've learned maturity maybe helped, and then also Orla Curran, our S&C, she's helped educate me a lot around the need for rest and recovery, and the fact that it's even more important sometimes than what you do on the pitch. And I think as a programme, we go through so much training, structured training, that you turn up and you do and you leave, that then actually when you leave, it's more about just your responsibility to make sure the next time you turn up that you're recovered and ready to go again. And I think building that trust with our S&C, with our coaches, that's been massive, because that's all dealt with then. Our load is managed, so then it's more your responsibility just to rest when you're not training.
You fit into the programme, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it helps from that perspective. You touched on it again there. I mean, obviously when you're on the pitch, there isn't time to be deliberating over what you're going to do. So how do you learn to make those quick decisions? Is it making them instinctive? Is it, you know, giving yourself a small number of options to choose from? Or how does that bit work?
Yeah, it's definitely, firstly, probably learning by make mistakes. When we first were on the series, we made many a mistake, and it was learning by analysis. And we do a lot of analysis before games to know what style of play we want to play, to know what scenarios we could be faced with. I also rely heavily on others. The likes of Stacey and Lee have played for the same amount of years, if not more, than me. And Stacey being a playmaker in the 15s game as well, that helps so much, having someone to rely on there. Emily Lane, again, at 9, I think it's important for 9 and 10s to work really close together. So I rely heavily on those girls. We do our analysis, we do our game plan, and then in training we actually try and simulate scenarios. So we'll have that added pressure of, this is your last play against Australia, you've got a scrum, and then that's where we've started now working on.
And will you have the opposition behaving as Australia would behave?
Yes, those? Yes. Yeah, okay. So before tournaments, whatever our pool is, we'll get our team that aren't travelling to do homework on those three teams, and they'll train like them at different scenarios, so then we'll know exactly what we want to do. And I think that's been really like a big change for us, because it gets us used to seeing different pictures, because if not, you often just play similar to how, like, we'll be defending against us, or we'll be attacking against our style of D, and that never really happens on a series.
And how do you identify risks and opportunities in that scenario? Is it analysis again? Is it Aidan sitting down and pointing out various things to look for? Or
yeah, it's both. Aidan's been brilliant that way. I think he recognises where our areas of growth are, because he's seen massive potential in us, and I think he's seen how good we were, but what he's seen more was the actual potential that we have. And it's true analysis as well. John Farrell, our analyst, will go and he'll be able to tell us that if you clean up this one stat, you will actually remove 4 tries for the opposition. Or if you try this, that will actually create 5 more tries. Or this is how the teams on the series are getting their tries. So I think it's kind of learning, and we're so lucky with the management team that we have, that they direct us in the right direction.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If we think about Lucy outside of rugby and all of those kind of things, and outside of the Sevens family, what have you learned from your sport experience to date that has helped you in that world, in the workplace and elsewhere?
Yeah, I think it's definitely helped me in that I have a lot of drive in anything that I do now. Before I started this, I don't think I was a well-rounded person. I loved GA and GA was my passion. And yes, I worked hard in school, but then when I went to college, it was kind of, you know, the bare minimum, or I wouldn't have done all the extras that I could have done for the likes of football, or I wouldn't have thought too much about who I am as a person. And rugby really gave me that space to do that. It gave me space that I think it's really important to be a good person. I think that actually helps you become a good player. And I learned that, and then I worked out what sort of a person do I want to be, what do I want to stand for, and rugby really forced me to look in the mirror that way. So I think it helped me explore my own personality, explore what I wanted to achieve in life, and get perspective that I wasn't just going to be Lucy the rugby player. So yeah, definitely, I think it's helped me that way. I think it's helped me with even just, I've met so many great people through rugby. I've been at so many tables with like business people and had opportunities to chat to those, and then that really helps when you go into a workplace and next thing you're on Teams calls or you're in meetings, and you need to be able to hold yourself as someone who technically should have a lot of career experience but due to putting rugby first doesn't. So I think that kind of helps compensate for that.
Okay, makes sense. Maybe to wrap up, and I know we're just off the back of a tournament, but we've another one coming straight down the track in a couple of weeks in Toulouse. Maybe give us a sense for what the group is thinking as you head into that tournament in Toulouse. And then beyond that, obviously there's a Sevens World Cup taking place in Cape Town in September. We need to do a bit of qualification for that in the summer as well. So as you look forward, I don't think we can look much forward much further than September. But between now and then, talk to us about the end of the World Series and the qualification.
Yeah, I think we're not going to shy away from the fact that we want a gold medal. I think we've silver and bronze, so you can't really aim for anything else but gold now at this stage. I think what for me myself, around just consistency, around topping a pool, winning the 3 from 3 on day one, I think it sets you up really well for day two. And I think it also just gives you good momentum going through. It means that we've kind of came on as a team, and being able to back it up over a whole weekend. And then we face day two. I think so far day one we've kind of been up and down, and it's been on day two that we've been able to pull it out. So I think that would be really important for me. And then World Cup, yeah, we have, like, firstly we have to qualify, which in itself is going to be tough. We've got Rugby Europe as well, so it's important to set ourselves up well for Rugby Europe next year for Olympic qualification, and then to end in a World Cup in Cape Town. I think given the season that we've had, I think it's really exciting facing into a World Cup knowing that we can go there and we can win, and that's
fingers
massive
crossed. I mean, the thing is, you know, the way I think about it is, if we can medal on the World Series, what's to stop us medaling at a World Cup or at an Olympics, right?
Yeah, totally. And yeah, what's even more exciting, I know we still have to qualify in July, but please God, we qualify and then we have a good run-in. We have like 5 or 6 weeks of just training and getting ready for this one event where we haven't had that all season. During the World Series, you're kind of just getting up just to come back down to go again. So that's going to be really exciting, to actually just go really hard for one tournament and try peak. And it's only once every 4 years, so it's massively exciting.
No, absolutely, it's great. Well, Lucy, it's been great to chat to you today. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to Triton Lake Perform. Congratulations again to you and the rest of the team on your fantastic achievement in Langford. And I know we're all looking forward to seeing you compete on the world stage over the next few months.
Thank you, Connor.
So that's a wrap on episode 3 of Triton Lake Perform. We hope that you enjoyed listening and gained insights from such a high performer. Thanks again for listening.